Chapter 18. Nearly I should. Apostrophe apostrophe said Piketty, the pupils of her eyes dilating. Joey conducted her to the top of the basement stairs, and told her to listen. Within a few yards of them was the morning room door, now standing ajar, and an intermittent flirtation in soft male and female tones could be heard going on inside. Piketty's lips parted at thus learning the condition of things, and she leant against the stair newel. "My? What's the matter?" apostrophe said Joey. "If this is London, I don't like it at all." Apostrophe apostrophe moaned Piketty. "Well, I never see such a girl fainting all over the stairs for nothing in the world." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Oh, it will soon be gone, it is only indigestion." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Indigestion? Much you simple country people can know about that. You should see what devils of indigestions we get in high life eating enormous great dinners and suppers that require clever physicians to carry them off, or else they'd carry us off with gout next day, and waking in the morning with such a splitting headache, a dry throat, and inward cusses about human nature that you feel all the world like some great lord. However, now let's go down again." Apostrophe apostrophe, "No, no, no." Apostrophe apostrophe said the unhappy maiden imploringly. "Hark!" Apostrophe, they listened again. The voices of the musician and poetess had changed. There was a decided frigidity in their tone, then came a louder expression, then a silence. "You needn't be afeard," apostrophe said Joey. "They won't fight. Bless you, they busts out quarreling like this times and times, when they've been over friendly, but it soon gets straight with them again." Apostrophe apostrophe, there was now a quick walk across the room, and Joey and his sister drew down their heads out of sight. Then the room door was slammed, quick footsteps went along the hall, the front door closed just as loudly, and Christopher's tread passed into nothing along the pavement. "That's rather a worse one than they mostly have. But Lord, 'tis nothing at all." Apostrophe apostrophe, "I don't much like biting here listening." Apostrophe apostrophe said Piketty. "Oh, 'tis how we do all over the West End," apostrophe said Joey. "'Tis your ignorance of town life that makes it seem a good deal to e." Apostrophe apostrophe, "You can't make much boast about town life, for you haven't left off talking just as they do down in Wessex." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Well, I own to that what's fair is fair, and 'tis a true charge. But if I talk the Wessex way, 'tisn't for want of knowing better. 'Tis because my staunch nater makes me bide faithful to our old ancient institutions. You'd soon own 'twasn't ignorance in me, if you knowed what large quantities of noblemen I gets mixed up with every day. In fact, 'tis thoughted here and there that I shall do very well in the world." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Well, let us go down," apostrophe said Piketty. "Everything seems so overpowering here." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Oh, you'll get broken soon enough. I felt just the same when I first entered into society." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Do you think Berta will be angry with me? How does she treat you?" Apostrophe, "Well, I can't complain. You see, she's my own flesh and blood, and what can I say? But, in secret truth, the wages is terrible low, and barely pays for the tobacco I consumes." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Oh Joey, you wicked boy. If mother only knew that you smoked." Apostrophe, "I don't mind the wickedness, so much as the smell. And Mrs. Peterwin has got such a nose for a fellow's clothes. 'Tis one of the greatest nuts in service, the smoke question. 'Tis thoughted that we shall make a great stir about it in the mansions of the nobility soon." Apostrophe apostrophe, "How much more you know of life than I do, you only 14 and me 17. Apostrophe apostrophe, "Yes, that's true. You see, age is nothing, 'tis opportunity. And even I can't boast, for many a younger man knows more." Apostrophe apostrophe, "But don't smoke, Joey, there's a dear." Apostrophe apostrophe, "What can I do? Society have its rules, and if a person wishes to keep himself up, he must do as the world do. We be old-fashioned slave as much a slave as the meanest in the land. ... They got downstairs again, and when the dinner of the French lady and gentleman had been sent up and cleared away, and also Ethelberta's evening tea, which she formed into a genuine meal, making a dinner of luncheon, when nobody was there, to give less trouble to her servant sisters, they all sat round the fire. Then the rustle of a dress was heard on the staircase, and squirrel-haired Ethelberta appeared in person. It was her custom thus, to come down every spare evening, to teach Joey and her sisters something or other, mostly French, which she spoke fluently. But the cook and housemaid showed more ambition than intelligence in acquiring that tongue, though Joey learned it readily enough. There was consternation in the camp for a moment or two, on account of poor Piketty, Ethelberta being not without firmness in matters of discipline. Her eye instantly lighted upon her disobedient sister, now looking twice as disobedient as she really was. "Oh, you are here, Piketty? I am glad to see you," said the mistress of the house quietly. This was altogether to Piketty's surprise, for as he had expected a round rating at least, in her freshness hardly being aware that this reserve of feeling was an acquired habit of Ethelberta's, and that civility stood in town for as much vexation as a tantrum represented in Wessex. Piketty lamely explained her outward reasons for coming, and soon began to find that Ethelberta's opinions on the matter would not be known by the tones of her voice. But innocent Piketty was as wily as a religionist in sly allusions of the letter, whilst infringing the spirit of a dictum, and by talking very softly and earnestly about the wondrous good she could do, by remaining in the house as governess to the children, and playing the part of lady's maid to her sister at show times, she so far coaxed Ethelberta out of her intentions, that she almost accepted the plan as a good one. It was agreed that for the present, at any rate, Piketty should remain. Then a visit was made to Mrs. Chickerell's room, where the remainder of the evening was passed, and harmony reigned in the household. 19. Ethelberta's drawing room. Piketty's heart was fitfully glad. She was near the man who had enlarged her capacity from girls to women's, a little note or two of young feeling to a whole diapason. And though nearness was perhaps not in itself a great reason for felicity, when viewed beside the complete realization of all that a woman can desire in such circumstances, it was much in comparison with the outer darkness of the previous time. It became evident to all the family that some misunderstanding had arisen between Ethelberta and Mr. Julian. What Piketty hoped in the center of her heart, as to the issue of the affair, it would be too complex a thing to say. If Christopher became cold towards her sister, he would not come to the house. If he continued to come, it would really be as Ethelberta's lover altogether, a pretty game of perpetual check for Piketty. He did not make his appearance for several days. Piketty, being a presentable girl, and decidedly finer natured than her sisters below stairs, was allowed to sit occasionally with Ethelberta in the afternoon, when the teaching of the little ones had been done for the day, and thus as he had an opportunity of observing Ethelberta's emotional condition with reference to Christopher, which Piketty did with an interest that the elder sister was very far from suspecting. At first Ethelberta seemed blithe enough without him. One more day went, and he did not come, and then her manner was that of apathy. Another day passed, and from fanciful elevations of the eyebrow and long breathings, it became apparent that Ethelberta had decidedly passed the indifferent stage, and was getting seriously out of sorts about him. Next morning she looked all hope. He did not come that day either, and Ethelberta began to look pale with fear. "Why don't you go out?" said Piketty timidly. "I can hardly tell. I have been expecting someone. When she comes I must run up to mother at once, must I not?" said clever Piketty. "It is not a lady," said Ethelberta blandly. She came then, and stood by Piketty, and looked musingly out of the window. I may as well tell you, perhaps, apostrophe, she continued. It is Mr. Julian. He is, I suppose, my lover, in plain English. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Piketty. Whom I am not going to marry until he gets rich. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah, how strange. If I had him such a lover, I mean I would marry him, if he continued poor. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't doubt it, Piketty. Just as you come to London without caring about consequences, or would do any other crazy thing, and not mind in the least what came of it. But somebody in the family must take a practical view of affairs, or we should all go to the dogs. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Piketty recovered from the snubbing which she felt that she deserved, and charged gallantly by saying, with delicate showings of indifference, do you love this mister, what's his name of yours? Apostrophe, 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 Mr. Julian? Oh, he's a very gentlemanly man. That is, except when he is rude, and ill-uses me, and will not come and apologize. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if I had him a lover, I would ask him to come, if I wanted him to. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Ethelberta did not give her mind to this remark, but, drawing a long breath, said, with a pouting laugh, which presaged unreality, the idea of his getting indifferent now. I have been intending to keep him on until I got tired of his attentions, and then put an end to them by marrying him. But here is he, before he has hardly declared himself, forgetting my existence as much as if he had vowed to love and cherish me for life. 'Tis an unnatural inversion of the manners of society. Apostrophe, apostrophe, when did you first get to care for him, dear Berta? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, when I had seen him once or twice. Apostrophe, apostrophe, goodness, how quick you were. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, if I am in the mind for loving, I am not to be hindered by shortness of acquaintanceship. Apostrophe, apostrophe, nor I neither. Apostrophe, apostrophe, sighed Piketty. Nor any other woman. We don't need to know a man well in order to love him. That's only necessary when we want to leave off. Apostrophe, oh Berta, you don't believe that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if a woman did not invariably form an opinion of her choice before as he has half seen him, and love him before as he has half formed an opinion, there would be no tears and pining in the whole feminine world, and poets would starve for want of a topic. I don't believe it, do you say? Ah, well, we shall see. Apostrophe, Piketty did not know what to say to this, and Ethelberta left the room, to see about her duties as public storyteller, in which capacity as he had undertaken to appear again this very evening. 20. The neighborhood of the Hall, the road home, London, was illuminated by the broad full moon. The pavements looked white, as if mantled with snow. Ordinary houses were sublimated to the rank of public buildings to palaces, and the faces of women walking the streets to those of calendared saints and guardian angels, by the pure bleaching light from the sky. In the quiet little street, where opened the private door of the hall chosen by Ethelberta for her storytelling, a brougham was waiting. The time was about 11 o'clock, and presently a lady came out from the building, the moonbeams forthwith flooding her face, which they showed to be that of the storyteller herself. As he hastened across to the carriage, when a second thought arrested her motion. Telling the manservant and a woman inside the brougham to wait for her, she wrapped up her features and glided round to the front of the house, where she paused to observe the carriages, and cabs driving up to receive the fashionable crowd stepping down from the doors. Standing here in the throng which her own talent and ingenuity had drawn together, she appeared to enjoy herself by listening for a minute or two to the names of several persons of more or less distinction as they were called out, and then regarded attentively the faces of others of lesser degree. To scrutinize the latter was, as the event proved, the real object of the journey from round the corner. When nearly everyone had left the doors, she turned back disappointed. Ethelberta had been fancying that her alienated lover Christopher was in the back rows tonight, but, as far as could now be observed, the hopeful supposition was a false one. When she got round to the back again, a man came forward. It was Ladywell, whom he had spoken to already that evening. "Allow me to bring you your notebook, Mrs. Peterwin. I think you had forgotten it," he said. "I assure you that nobody has handled it but myself." Ethelberta thanked him and took the book. "I use it to look into between the parts, in case my memory should fail me," she explained. "I remember that I did lay it down, now you remind me." Ladywell had apparently more to say, and moved by her side towards the carriage. But she declined the arm he offered, and said not another word till he went on, haltingly. "Your triumph tonight was very great, and it was as much a triumph to me as to you. I cannot express my feeling, I cannot say half that I would. If I might only thank you much," said Ethelberta, with dignity. "Thank you for bringing my book, but I must go home now. I know that you will see that it is not necessary for us to be talking here." "Yes, you are quite right," said the repressed young painter, struck by her seriousness. "Blame me, I ought to have known better. But perhaps a man, well, I will say it, a lover without indiscretion, is no lover at all. Circumspection and devotion are a contradiction in terms. I saw that, and hoped that I might speak without real harm." "You calculated how to be uncalculating, and are natural by art." She said, with the slightest accent of sarcasm. "But pray do not attend me further, it is not at all necessary or desirable. My maid is in the carriage." She bowed, turned, and entered the vehicle, seating herself beside Piketty. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.